Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. Probably most of you are not familiar with the slang terms bonehead or knucklehead. How many of you have heard of these terms? Oh, okay. I thought maybe they'd gone out of use. I haven't heard them in a long time. But when I was younger, much younger, you heard them said it all the time. they mean, they try to infer that when spoken about somebody, that there's nothing in there except big piece of cement, bonehead and knucklehead. No, there's no consciousness in there, is what that means. It's a very derogatory term, and it means somebody made a really, really bad mistake, or somebody has very poor judgment, made a very bad decision. So it's a very, very critical expression, and I don't hear it so much anymore, but maybe it's still in use. When I was young, as a child, back in the day, we heard it all the time. It was used in the business world when somebody made a decision and lost money, you know, or lost market share or something like that. What a you bonehead! And I heard about it. I heard the expression used in the sports, related to sporting events, quite a bit. So, one time when I was pretty young, I used to go. I lived in New York, and I used to go to see the Giants play. That's long before they came here. The New York Giants play baseball. And so one day, my dad took me to the ball game. What a great thing for you, for a young boy. Your dad takes you to the game. It's great. And there was one play where the ball was hit to a shortstop, and he threw the ball to a base, and a run scored, and it was the wrong thing to do. Wrong thing to do. And this, so some guy behind us yelled, "What a bonehead play!" You know, and somebody down in front of us said, "Oh, you knucklehead!" poor shortstop. And I asked my father, "What does that mean? What do those words mean?" And my father said he didn't see the whole field. No, he didn't use judgmental language. He didn't say that shortstop was really a jerk or something, or he doesn't know how to play. He didn't say that. He says, he didn't see the whole field. And I thought, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good response. Means that poor judgment, bad play, because he had a very limited view of the field. He didn't see the whole field. I thought that was pretty good. Well, those terms, knucklehead, bonehead, those are a very descriptive way to condemn poor judgment. To condemn someone for not being aware, fully aware of what's going on. And when we don't pay attention and we're not fully aware of what's going on, we're at risk of making a bad decision. And so somebody says, "You, that was a bonehead decision. You weren't aware." So if we're not fully aware of what's going on, we could make a bad decision, or maybe even make no decision at all when we really, really should have made one. So bones in bonehead. Bonehead decision. Bones means a mind that is hard and lifeless, you know. There's nothing going on in there. There's no juices aren't flowing. The processes aren't working. Bonehead means an empty, like just a skull, nothing there. Hard and lifeless. Or in other words, bonehead means not to be fully present. Knucklehead means not to be fully present. So we make a mistake and people condemn it. Not fully present because we're distracted or we're bothered by something. And so our, which limits our judgment and our ability to see the whole picture, so we're at risk of doing something foolish. Of course, in our practice, when that happens, we don't use harsh language like that and condemn people. We're a little bit more charitable. When I was a kid, I learned another quality of bones. Bones, when I was young, we used to make soup. People still make soup out of bones. Very thick, hard bones, I remember. You could go down to my mother would often send me to the local butcher to get some bones for free. Just give away bones. You come home with a bag of bones. And in those days, it seemed like everybody made soup from bones. And you put them in a pot, cover them with water, and boil them for hours. Just boil them for hours. And it would develop a wonderful soup, a wonderful flavor. And all you had to do was throw in some vegetables, and you had a very inexpensive and satisfying meal, boiling these bones. So I kind of learned a couple of lessons as a child. Bones can be hard and unresponsive, or they can become very tasty and very nutritious when we boil them for a long time. Anyway, I thought about that. Boil the bones for a long time and something nice happens. Our practice is like that. We have to boil our bones. Our knuckleheadedness. Our boneheadedness, we have to boil our bones. Those soup bones of my youth were like, very much like our own stubborn tendencies. Our mental habits that hold us back, that cloud our vision, and that lead to poor judgment and making mistakes, and that get in the way of living a creative life, our bones. And they also get in the way of an optimism that can come from the confidence of knowing our true self. So we should boil our bones. We should admit that we have bones. We should boil our bones, and I think we can do that in two ways. First, there's the personal level, the emotional and thinking level. where we acknowledge our knuckleheadedness. So I'm so quick to judge, or I don't pay attention, or I'm not as aware as I could be. We acknowledge our own knuckleheadedness. We don't deny it. And we accept and face our lapses. Like when we can stop and say to ourselves, that was a bonehead thing for me to do, or a bonehead thing for me to say. And it can be painful, that admission, but it's honest. And it takes determination. And this acknowledgement is how we learn to have a wider view, to see the whole field. This acknowledgement of our own boneheadedness. And the other dimension of boiling our bones is the universal, or the spiritual, or the selfless dimension, where we let go of any concept of ourself as something special or someone important, where we orient our mind towards others. Where we keep a warm and accepting feeling of others, whether we know them or we don't know them. So this is what we just finished chanting, loving kindness practice beyond our own personal concerns. This is a very soft way to boil bones and to help us see the entire field, to see the big picture. If we boil our bones indefinitely, they will dissolve. There will be no trace if we boil our bones indefinitely, continually, for a whole lifetime. There will be no trace of bones, and we will no longer be troubled by ego. And we will no longer be bothered by the actions and words of others, even when something may be directed at us personally. We won't be bothered by it if we boil our bones. And then we will have the mind of compassion, and the mind of enlightenment. We will... We will do something in a boneheaded way sometimes. Once in a while, we will be a knucklehead. This is normal. We can't escape it. It's just about unavoidable. But it's no problem, because we can correct whatever happened as a result of our boneheadedness. Problem arises when we hold on to a boneheaded attitude. An I don't care attitude. I'm not going to make an effort attitude, or to heck with it attitude. This is a knucklehead at work. This is a very narrow attitude, and this is a very fearful attitude. Fear leads to boneheadedness. So Buddha taught, the first thing that Buddha taught was that our suffering is the result of our delusions. And in modern terms, we could say that our suffering is caused by being a knucklehead. which means not seeing things as they are, and so we don't know what we are doing, even though we think we know what we are doing. In one of the teachings of Dogen, as you know, was the founder of the Soto Zen sect in Japan. In one of his teachings, he wrote, "When one bit of dust is aroused, it includes the great earth. When one flower opens, the whole world is aroused. When a single moment of thinking is dropped away, the 84,000 afflicting delusions are removed. When a single moment of thinking is dropped away, the afflicting delusions are removed." When he refers to thinking, when thinking is dropped away, he is referring to our mind's incessant activity. The activity that goes on without ceasing, which blocks any chance we have of recognizing our universal inherent activity. Our mind's incessant thinking and judging activity blocks our seeing the truth through the opening of the flower. The mind of incessant activity is a bonehead mind. The mind of endless, self-centered desire. The mind that can't see the whole field. When we let go of that mind, then our bones can be dissolved. So our practice is about gaining some control over our selfish desires. We don't have to strive to be saints and have no desires at all. They're going to come up. They're going to arise. Our practice is about not being overwhelmed by these desires, so that our one true desire can be clarified. In Zen practice, the job of the teachers is to encourage us to find the truth of things. Without selfish seeking or attachment. If we think that it is okay to extend our selfish desires without reflecting on ourself, this leads to a bonehead way of life. Again, referring to writing of Dogen in his Mountains and Waters Sutra. He wrote, "The green mountains are always walking. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night." What interesting metaphor. It points to a selfless mind, a mind that is always alive and always awake, a mind that has no dead end, does not remain in place, and doesn't turn into a bone. Stone woman gives birth to a child at night. At the moment of birth, everything is included. Nothing is left out, even though not seen by our eye. So we call it night. So the moment of enlightenment is the stone woman, the stone head, the knucklehead, giving birth, unseen. Suzuki Roshi always emphasized keeping the mind soft and flexible. This is the prerequisite for giving birth. Giving birth to the spiritual life and to the creative life. Giving birth to the world, giving birth to ourself, and giving birth to all things. Soft, flexible mind, the opposite of the bonehead mind. So this soft, flexible mind is what appears when the bonehead mind is dissolved. Through our practice, we are continually rounding off or sharpening the sharp corners of our mind, rounding off the sharp corners of our life and of our daily activities. So everything can go smoothly. And as we continue our practice, continue our mindfulness, our mind becomes round and flexible and soft. So imagine that you are the Bodhisattva and others are waiting for your help. If you keep this image, more and more you will become selfless. The bones will dissolve, and you will nourish everyone. Does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, please.
So I heard that bonehead is kind of stubborn or ignorant mind. and we are softening this mind to more flexible. So in that, I mean, certain instances we have to be more stubborn and, I mean, follow some rules. Even our center has the rituals to follow certain way of doing things. It looks like a fixed, not changing. Some of them we have to do that way. And so is it always our mind should be soft, like, I mean, a fluidity, like mind is required always, or we have to have certain times it has to be more solid like a bone? So is it a both should be required, or it is should be always become soft, selfless? I mean, it is kind of both sometime required in a certain situation to be solidified, to follow certain rules and policies. So how the mind can become one between things like that? Or we have to follow certain situation to be solid, and other situation you have to be very soft, selfless?
It's not necessary to try to make two kinds of situations. All situations, our attitude in all situations should be the same. So, for example, if you're driving, we follow the rules of the traffic rules, and if the light is red, we stay. But that's not being boneheaded, you know, that's just abstaining. But we can have a soft mind. We don't simply stop because the light is red. We look around, we keep our awareness, we make sure there's no danger, there's nothing going to get in the way. We don't stop, just because there's red light. We stop because we care. We don't want this vehicle to hurt something or someone. So we can be strictly following a rule. At the same time, our mind is taking care of things. That example comes to me because today, this morning, when we went out to the Starbucks after the morning zazen, and as I was leaving the parking lot, looked this way, and there was a bicycle coming. So I waited. But the guy behind me blew his horn at me. He wanted me to go, you know. He didn't see the bicycle, you know. So he thought I was being a bonehead. He was probably saying, "Why is that guy stuck there?" But he didn't see the bigger picture. There's a bicycle coming. I can't go. So finally, the bicycle passed by, and the guy behind probably saw it. So sometimes we can act in a bonehead way when we don't see the whole field. And I wasn't stopped because there was a rule. I was stopped because, uh-oh, he's coming. So in every situation, you know, there may be a rule that we should follow because it's best for all of us, but we can also bring a wide mind to that situation, and that mind is not influenced by some rule. It's influenced by our caring. And it in your work situation, sometimes you understand some decision that has to be made and you forcefully argue for it with other people. You know, in a work situation, we could forcefully argue for something that we think is right, but we do it in a way that's not stubborn, that's caring. So we should bring our soft mind to every situation. Even though in that situation we may feel we need to follow a very narrow path. And I think that may be a misunderstanding that people have that says, oh, that kind of spiritual practice won't work here. We have to be very hard-nosed and insistent. Keeping an open mind and staying aware of things that we may have to take care of doesn't get in the way of our, you know, productivity or something like that. But it's a very joyful feeling when we live our life attentively with an eye towards seeing the big picture. Thank you. Yes, Umar?
So we had gone to San Francisco to Ocean Beach, and there are little birds on the beach that peck on the sand. And it's a very, so if you sit, if you just stand still and watch them, the waves will come and they will run away from the waves. And when the wave goes back out, they see little crabs and little animals, and they go and peck and grab them. And it's like watching a symphony that's going on between nature and these birds that, you know, they're moving in. And dogs will come and chase them, and they fly, and they come and sit back down, and they go and do this over and over and over. It's really beautiful. And we were there last, I think Sunday it was sunset, and they were doing this, and I was thinking, this is really pretty. But when you were talking about your dad watching the game, how this person did not pay attention, and I was thinking, what our practice really teaches us is to be like these birds, that they have this huge ocean, this huge force that's coming towards them. They've learned how to play with it in a way that they can find sustenance from it, and other animals and other things can come and disturb them, but they just go, it's okay, and they come back down. It's okay, and they come back down. And it was just really wonderful. I was just standing there and watching this for like 10 minutes. Like, I was thinking, this somebody can just take up and have the London Symphony Orchestra put some music underneath it, and it would be just so poetic, you know? But it was just so perfect. And I was thinking, this is what our practice is, really. This is the essence that, I was thinking, I need to become like these birds, you know, more like these birds where things come and go, and you know, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And the sense of community that they had was amazing too. There were like 20 of them moving together. It wasn't like one was separate. One or two would go away, then they would come back and join the group. It was just amazing, just seeing back and forth, back and forth.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
So your lecture reminded me of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Dave.
Les, I also very much liked your story about the baseball game with your father. It seems quite wonderful when a child is exposed to a situation like that and then the parent sets that kind of an example. It kind of reminds me of something that Suzuki Roshi once said. I don't know if there are words in Japanese that would translate to bonehead or knucklehead, or if perhaps the Japanese are just culturally too polite to say things like that. But Suzuki Roshi did talk about a wonderful word that captures more like the point of view that your father had. It was the word tambanku. And literally speaking, what this means is when somebody is working on something around the house or maybe at a construction site and they're carrying a board on their shoulder. And because they're carrying this board on their shoulder, they have to walk carefully because they can only see on one side. They can't see everything around them. And more figuratively, the term has come to mean somebody who can only see one side of things and can't see the whole field. So this was a very beautiful reference that Suzuki Roshi made in one of his lectures, and I've always thought it was very striking.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Speaking of the bones and boiling and the idea of questioning and the active mind, restless perhaps mind, and if how to engage the boiling. What is the boiling? How do we practice that?
With a total dedication, with complete energy, and not with passivity, but constantly being aware of what it is that needs to be boiled. This, I think, that awareness is the starting point of practice. Oh, this needs to be boiled. So you keep the heat on and watch it and give it time. And you find that the life becomes more flavorful as we continue this boiling process. Then we don't give up. Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.